Shout out to Claritev for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. I've been battling allergies for years now. Let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
I've got into one of the more challenging arguments with my wife that we've had in the last year, 2 days ago, right? Like she and I just, our triggers, our emotional wounds just rammed right into each other. And it took us, you know, 24 hours to really repair. So it's not like there's any sort of perfection here. It's just like we could kind of see that like, oh, those are our hurts coming at each other. And it's like, oh, this is great. It's just unearthed something that's unresolved for me. So that gives me an opportunity to like, oh, wow, this is a pointer to my work. So instead of like, oh, gosh, I'm bad. I really hurt her and I did all these horrible things. I'm like, oh, wow, gosh, I didn't realize that that's how I'm showing up. Wow, that's a gift. Like that's something I get to go look at and work through.
What's up, gang? Welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mrshazadeh. I'm so pumped to have you here with me. Now listen. The Greatness Machine, we're about two things. Number one, people who are living their passions. And number two, those who are creating greatness in the world and doing both of these things despite the odds against them. Each episode, we're going to feature interviews with game changers, business leaders, you know, telling us their origin stories, what made them tick, what got them to where they are now. Why? So it can help you step into your greatness within your life, your business, and your career. Occasionally, you might hear a few solo episodes from myself, moi as I say, as I leverage my 20 years of entrepreneurship as a CEO and founder to help you grow and level up in your journey to scale your life and your business. So come be a fly on the wall, enjoy the conversation, and I'm stoked to have you here with me. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mrshazadeh. Boy, do we have a special. This is a monumental moment in The Greatness Machine's history. You, Doug Irwin, are officially the first repeat guest on the show. Welcome to the show, Doug Irwin.
Oh, wow. I feel really special, Darius. It's so good to see you. I'm really happy to be back.
So for those of you that are new to the show, The Greatness Machine is really about two things. It's about people who are living their passions to create greatness in the world. And today's going to be a really special episode. You know, one of the reasons I wanted to ask Doug here was last time, if you look, as I said, he's a repeat guest. And Doug was actually one of the first people when we started this as a live stream. And we ended up putting the show out as a long form podcast. But I was going back and I was like, man, I would really love to bring back some of my like best guests. And Doug was top of the list. It was like a no-brainer for me. I was like, oh, I'm bringing back the Doug. And I don't call Doug. I call him the Dugger. So I'm bringing back the Dugger. Let me just say this. Doug and I are in a CEO group. We've been in the same CEO group for 16 years. We've grown up a lot together in our business life. He has a great podcast. We'll be talking about that in a second. But one of the things that we talk a lot about is just like this ability to have self-love and to take care of yourself and to like put yourself, like your mental health first. And we've been through this journey together as both friends and colleagues, you know, really leveling up. And one of the reasons I wanted you here today, because I think you have a really great story to tell around how people can really take care of themselves first to level up as human beings. And I've seen you on this amazing journey and I'm really excited to share that with our guests today. So, you're our guest, with our listeners. So, man.
Well, I'm just really honored, Darius. I mean, it's been such a beautiful journey to go through life with you for all these 16 years. And, you know, it's just coming back to Austin, seeing the world through your eyes. And then, you know, just the depth at which we get to share is just really remarkable. It's just a real pleasure to be in relationship with you and to stand alongside you as you've stood along me on all these years. So I'm just really honored to be here.
Well, thank you, man. And honestly, the honor's mine as well. So I want to give a little bit of your formal background. So for those of you that have not listened to our past show, by the way, you should listen to our past show because it's really funny. Doug and I, we vibe together. And that's evident in that show. But So right now, Doug serves as the Senior Vice President of Entrepreneurial Development at Edon. So basically what that means in English is that he's in charge of making sure that the state of Nevada and the city of Reno has a thriving economic and entrepreneurial environment. And he's really built that environment up. I mean, they have a Tesla Gigafactory there. There's so many cool things happening. And you've really been like involved in building that ecosystem in Northern Nevada, which is really cool. And we'll talk a little bit about that. That didn't come by like happenstance. You didn't happen to like just stumble into like helping build an economic and entrepreneurial ecosystem. Doug actually founded six companies by himself with partners, including e-commerce, software development, a medical diagnostic company where they basically built sperm counters.
Super fun.
What's that?
It was super fun. I love that business, you know, just from all the conversations we had and all the people, and that was fun.
My favorite story with that, and we'll go there in a second, is when the Japanese scientists had the exploding sperm counter. So,
yeah. I was me, but good for them. You know, that was a
not good if that's your business. Funny story to tell 2 decades later. But you know, I will say that you're also a coach, and you're doing some coaching for some amazing people. Doug's an amazing coach. Although we are not formally engaged in a coaching relationship, Doug coaches me all the time. So I lean on him. When I'm in a vulnerable state, you will easily get me to admit that Doug is one of my spirit animals. So yeah, man, it's so good to have you here, brother. And most importantly out of all this, he is an amazing father, husband, and family man. He's a avid hot spring finder. That's where the naked hippie comments came in on the last episode. But man, just really glad to have you here, man.
Yeah, Darius, I wish you would introduce me everywhere I went. I feel like that would really change everything for me. Well, and you've been there for me too, man. I mean, I got to tell you, the feeling's mutual. It warms my heart. I mean, during Christmas break, like you and I had this really, really powerful conversation. It really helped me as well. So it's the feeling's mutual. I'm excited.
Yeah. Hey, listen, listeners, if you just want to like kick back, get some popcorn, we're just going to love on each other. Me and Duggar, we tell each other how much we like each other for the next 45 minutes. It might get a little boring on your seat, but I don't give a shit. I'm just going to let my ego get fed, and I'm sure he doesn't mind. And you can come back in 35 and we'll, you know, give you some links on where you can find him.
actually, this is important, right? I mean, you know, like being able to, like we had this really powerful conversation around what does it really mean to accept a compliment, right? Like how often does someone say, hey, you know, I really appreciate this about you, or this thing. And you're like, yeah. And I appreciate about that in you also. Mm-hmm. Instead of like really taking a moment and saying, you know, wow, that really feels good. And to me, it's like, you know, someone is giving you a compliment. They're giving you this gift and you can choose to accept it. And actually even, I would say, take a step further. You can kind of see me. I always take it and try to push it into my heart. As just like, you know, they're giving this gift to me. I don't want to take that away from them. And then also to really take that moment and savor that. Because I think it's too often we don't feel like we deserve it for whatever reason, or we're too quick to kind of respond back. So I think giving each other a lot of love is probably good, but probably would get boring for your listeners eventually.
Yeah, we're 7 minutes, 18 seconds in, like on minute 44 of these guys just telling each other how awesome they are. We might have a few of our listeners check out. like, man, those guys are really good at giving each other compliments. It's funny you said that though, because like I even think of myself and I'm like, oh man, like someone gives me a compliment, like first thing I do is I'm like, I get a little embarrassed, right? Which I don't get embarrassed about very, very few things. I can count on one hand how many times I've been embarrassed in my life, and you were present for one of them.
Was I responsible for it? Hopefully not.
No. So let me just say this. So Doug and I, we've been on this entrepreneurial journey together. We're in the same CEO forum, been in it for 16 years. And in 2012, I decided to do a TEDx event in San Francisco. And in 2000, I think it was 14 and 15, you did TEDx Reno. Yeah. So for a listener, that's like, what does that even mean? It's basically a community organized TED event. And so part of doing that is you have to actually go to the TED conference, right? And you have to go to the TED conference in order to get a higher level, like license or whatever, so you can have bigger events. And TEDx Reno is a really big event. It was a beautiful event that Doug put on with other volunteers. And so we're up in Vancouver for the TED in Whistler, actually, where they have this event called TED Active. So I'm going to wholeheartedly admit to our listeners right now, the one time I got embarrassed out of, like, I'm telling you, I can't even count. I don't remember how many times I've been embarrassed in my life, because there's not that many. But it's a low number. It's like single digits. And it's less than I can count on my hand. And I can only think of one right now. And Doug was sitting right when it happened. So we're there, and they do this thing where the participants in the conference get to go on stage, and they have to talk about a scar they have on their body, right? And do you remember this?
I do remember it now that you bring it up. Yeah.
So I somehow get the bright idea, which I have not done this yet. It's on my list. On my bucket list is to do stand-up comedy. And I haven't done it, which I don't know why, because I'd probably be okay at it. Okay is the key word. Because I do have a tendency to hit or miss, which I think a lot of comics do. But I bomb hard when I bomb. And this is a bomb that happened. So I said, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to pretend like I am, like, do you guys remember the John Wayne Bobbitt story? Now, some listeners are like, have no idea what I'm talking about. But it's a dude whose wife basically cut his penis off when he was sleeping for cheating on her. And I said, I'm going to go tell a story of a scar on my body. I'm going to make pretend like what happened to me is what happened to, like, John Wayne Bobbitt. Do you remember this? So this is in front of like 1,000 people who I don't know. And so I get on stage and I get the mic and I start telling this like story about this guy. It's one time I'm laying in bed and it's windy night, hot summer, and I have a sheet on me, and I wake up and my girlfriend's standing there with a serrated knife. And then I like look up at the crowd and they're like horrified. They're absolutely fucking horrified. And then I say, oh, I'm just kidding. And it was crickets. Like 1,000 people looking at me like not knowing whether to shoot me or like hate me, or I don't know what they thought. But I was like, exit stage left.
Next presenter, please.
So I don't know if you remember this, but the next presenter is this dude that comes up. And he's like shaking, and he like unbuttons his shirt, and it shows all these scars on his body that his mother like cut on him when he was like an infant to save his life. And like she's like sucked the poison out of his body and saved his life when he was an infant. And he gets like a standing ovation. And I'm sitting next to Doug and I'm like, hey, do you think they're going to forget what I just said? And you're like, you said something like, hopefully.
Dude, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. Oh my gosh. What an experience. What an experience. It's just fun going through things with you, man. You're just, it was just the wrong crowd for that.
It was the wrong crowd. And I'm the king of like not knowing my audience all the time, but you know, it's funny. Sometimes you just got to take risks.
Totally. Well, as long as you're not, you know, like you took a risk, you failed, but you know what? It didn't stop you from going back up and doing that. And, you know, like you learn from that. You bounce back.
Yeah. I learned that when you're around a bunch of like nerds at TED, don't make jokes about your penis getting cut off in public. Like that, like, I don't know when I'll get to use that in learning again. I think the learning is know thy audience, right? My audience right now is my, like, hey, dude, like my kid's listening. And like, why did you just say any of that? But hey, everyone that listens to this show knows that don't listen to it with your kid in the car. They're going to learn stuff they probably don't need to learn quite yet.
It's okay. This is a good way of softening up the crowd for us to talk about the real stuff, you know?
Yeah. Let's start with the ultimate ridiculousness and then move to the higher level. The two spectrums of Darius's life. But, you know, like one of the reasons I wanted you on here is, like I said earlier, you know, you've been on this like really crazy journey that I've seen from an entrepreneurial standpoint to getting into Edon. The most, I think, and those are cool. And those make you a great human, and they're exciting for some folks. But for me, the reason I wanted you to come on, I wanted you to, the listeners to kind of learn from your story is, man, I've seen you like blossom as a human being, level up in a way that's like, man, it's kind of exhilarating to watch someone do that. And what I'd love, the biggest thing is around this idea of loving on yourself and like putting your, like taking care of yourself as a human being. Cause I find like as an overachiever, and like we end up doing these things where we start and taking, you know, getting on stage and getting bombed on is me trying to be, I'm trying to win over a crowd. Right.
Yeah.
And that's me feeding this hungry ghost in me that wants to be loved on. Right.
Yeah. You
know, that, and it didn't get its love that moment. That's for sure. But I'd love to talk a little bit about your journey in how you went and tried all these things, and inevitably you found this spot in your life where now you're really leveling up, I guess, from a spiritual level.
Yeah.
I meant it when I said it, that you're one of my spirit animals. It's because I want to be more like you from a spiritual perspective. So do you mind maybe talking a little bit about like your journey and how you've gotten to, you know, where you're at right now?
Yeah, totally. No, I appreciate the prompt. You know, I think it really started, actually, we were talking about the medical device company. For me, really, my journey to spirituality really started in 2009. I was running Priya, the medical device company we were talking about at the time, and it was failing. You know, I was in the business with my brother. We had to lay off most of our staff. Like, I'd raised about $10 million, and it was not clear how we were going to, you know, return much of that money. I mean, ultimately we got it sold, but during that whole time, like, everything started to fall apart, you know, and I fell into bad habits of like drinking and strip clubs, and, you know, I wasn't really a big drug user, but like there was, like, I was definitely getting myself out into places that were really not great for me. And it was really around trying to soothe all this discomfort. And I went to Belize with my then girlfriend. I guess it was my wife at that point. And, you know, I'd almost lost her through this whole process, you know, and I went to Belize, and in the airport in San Francisco, I picked up this little tiny book called The Secrets of Happiness. And so I go to Belize, and I'm really in a bad spot, and I'm flipping through this book, and it basically outlined all the different major philosophies of life. And I flipped through it, and I was never religious. And I just, for whatever reason, I flipped to the page around Buddhism. And I'm like, I'm going to learn about this. And that was really where it started. At the lowest point of my life, like, almost lost my wife, my business was failing, my brother and I were estranged. And I'm like, something's got to give. Like, this is not working for me. And so that's when it really started. Now, it's taken, you know, the journey since then has been circuitous and long, and lots of other things have happened. But that was really the origin of it, which was when, as you would say, when your face gets ripped off, it's when I started to look for a new way of being. And, you know, I didn't even totally like get deep into Buddhism. I just started like, I'm going to start meditating. And that's really, you know, that was the beginning of that for me, was on this, you know, starting that spiritual journey. You know, if I come from a family, my grandfather was a Presbyterian minister. My father was a Presbyterian minister who left the church. So I grew up in a little bit of a religious tradition, but that's never been my thing, really. And so just to kind of explore this new way of being was very different for me.
It's interesting, because, you know, if you think back to 40, 50 years ago, right? Like that idea of faith probably, it mirrors a lot of what you know, solves for a lot of the things you're probably looking for now.
Totally. Right?
And it was much more of an available resource. Like, and it's not that it's not available right now for our more, you know, religious listeners, which are probably far and few between. Maybe it was more accepted as like, that's a more, like, I don't accept that as an answer, because I think that there's too much dogma around.
Yeah, me too.
You know, like being a Presbyterian minister, you know, but I firmly believe in God and the power of God and the mysteries of the world, right? Yeah. And so it's interesting that you probably, there's probably something there that your father and your grandfather were looking for that they found through that was their avenue of solving for those issues. But you've kind of picked a much different route, because I consider you probably one of the more spiritual people I know. And so I think it's interesting that was your solution, was this more Buddhism, this route towards more Buddhist, I guess.
Yeah,
would you consider yourself Buddhist?
I consider myself a freelance mystic, to be honest with you. So and let's define, you know, in my mind, a mystic is someone who seeks direct experience with the divine. And so I consider myself a freelance mystic, because my spiritual identity, I guess, or connection really has been informed by Buddhism, Advaita Vedanta, Hinduism, and what I would call, like, you know, shamanism and a little bit of like native tradition. So you kind of throw all these together. Plus, obviously, we live in a Christian nation. And I think if you really get to the essence of what Christianity teaches, it's also beautiful. Again, I had a fair bit of aversion to the structure of the church that can be great for other people. That was never a thing for me. So unfortunately, for a long time, I would say I threw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to Christianity. I mean, if you look at Christ, he was a rebel, and there's a lot of beautiful things to be learned there. I just, you know, I've kind of come to my own spirituality more through the kind of Eastern wisdom traditions. So really about self-exploration, self-discovery, direct, and like seeking more direct experience with the divine in various ways. I mean, meditation being probably the primary one, but definitely not the only one.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. In the world of successful partnerships, names like Procter & Gamble, Ben & Jerry, and supply and demand echo through business history. But when it comes to growing your business, who are the perfect partners? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. We're talking from launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we hit $1 million order stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Picture this, a time when my business was facing a tough hurdle and I wasn't sure how to break through. But then came the breakthrough moment, a game changer that took my business to the next level. You know, what I absolutely adore about Shopify is its unparalleled ability to adapt and grow with your ambitions. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 75 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Darius, all lowercase. That's D-A-R-I-U-S. Go to shopify.com/Darius now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Darius. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. Hey there, friends. It's Darius Mashazda here, and I have a little confession to make. You see, I've been battling allergies for years now, and let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Allergies have been my constant companion. They stop me from fully enjoying the little things in life, canceling plans with friends because of sudden allergy attack, to missing out on an outdoor activity because of sneezing fits. Allergies have been a real nuisance. Luckily, for those of us who live with symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing and a runny nose, itchy, watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I've been a Claritin D user for many, many years now, and let me tell you, it's made a world of difference. Since I started using Claritin D, my symptoms have improved dramatically. Now I can breathe easier, enjoy outdoor activities without worrying about sneezing fits, and truly live my life without being held back by allergies. Ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter now. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear, use as directed. What? So let me ask you a question about this, because I think a lot of listeners might be hearing us talk right now and they're like, oh, these guys are talking about a bunch of bullshit that I'm not into. And I'm going to say this because I used to joke, and Doug knows this, I used to joke, there's two things in the world I hate: meditation and hiking. And I still hate hiking. which maybe I don't, because I actually like meditation. I like love meditation now. Doug actually turned me on to meditation through the Waking Up app, Sam Harris app, which has been monopolizing about an hour of every one of my mornings for the past couple of weeks. But So for you, when you, you know, read this book and got kind of turned on to meditation and Buddhism, was it like, man, my life's not going the way I want it to go? What was like your first step?
Yeah, I mean, I just realized that I needed some life philosophy. Like I felt like I didn't have like an ethical and moral framework, and I really didn't even seek a religious structure to do so. I remember when everything was going poorly with career, was falling apart, standing in front of the mirror, and like 2 hours went by. Wow. And I just was in conversation with myself, my brother, I was arguing. And so for me, the thing that was really fascinating about Buddhism was it was like, I think it was sort of the Buddhism's like one of the first psychologies. Like it really was a way of relating to your mind and your experience in a different way. So I wasn't really interested in, you know, the framework of, you know, the Buddhist religion as much as like, here are some tools that can help you relate to your mind. And I remember the first time that I recognized being mindful. I was in Singapore and I was having an argument with my business partner. And all of a sudden I like noticed I was aware of being aware. And it was almost like that scene in like, The Matrix, where he like steps back and all of a sudden he can just move everything. So for me, it was a very visceral. I mean, I remember it very clearly. I was having this conversation and I started to get really elevated and I stepped back and I'm like, wow, I'm getting really angry right now. And I was able to change my relationship to it. And that was enough to get me hooked. I'm like, oh, wow, if I can do that, then there's all these other things that I might be able to do. Of course, starting with meditation, hoping you're going to get something out of it is a pretty common thing. Ultimately, you know, as you get more involved in it, you know, how it affects you is different. I mean, I do think ultimately, you know, it's about changing your relationship to your mind and the world around you. And it's really powerful once you develop that ability and see, which is inside all of us.
Yeah, it's well, and if you think like, man, I'm going to sound like Sam Harris right now. It's like, who's watching the watcher? You know, there's some people like, what the fuck is that guy talking about? But it's like every experience is, and like, that's all you have. Yeah. And what I'm, you know, I'm kind of at a point right now where I'm watching the watcher a lot. And I'm like, to your point, like, and this is taken, I didn't start meditating until it was a little over three years ago. I just turned 44 last week, so 41. Again, like my quote was, there's two things in this world I hate, meditation and hiking, and it changed 3 years ago with one of them. But what I found was I was bad at it at first, which is a funny statement to make about meditation, but in that I would sit there and just like play the tape, right? I'd lay there and I'd breathe in a few times, and then I'd start thinking about all the shit I need to do and how I want to grow my business and how what I need to do it more with my kids. And I'm just sitting there like thinking about everything while I'm laying there. And that's how I started meditation. And now I've gotten to the point where if I do any of that, I stop myself and recenter and get present. Right. And,
yeah.
I've just now turned that corner after 3 years where I can actually practice that, the second part of the practice, which is not even just laying there thinking about all my shit,
yeah,
but actually like watching myself try to be more present. Like, how was your journey with that as far as from a meditative standpoint?
I'm with you. It took me a long time, and I'm with you. I credit Sam Harris. I mean, the one thing that has been the easiest to stay consistent with, because I mean, I think meditation is a practice. People some often be like, oh, I don't feel good, I'm gonna go meditate. Well, that's great. But I think ultimately, you know, the practice is breaking out of the illusion of your ego or your mind and coming back to, you know, this foundational consciousness. So like the practice is doing that repeatedly so that when you go out into the world, you have that capability. I mean, a couple of the things that come up for me really is this idea of cultivating curiosity. Like as soon as I started to get that glimpse, I became really curious. And now I'm just kind of funny. I'm like, wow, look at what I'm doing. Like these things are happening. Like I'm not necessarily doing it. It's just sort of happening. And I'm watching it with that curiosity, which was, again, it kept me connected to it. Just noticing all the ways that I show up and patterns. And this sort of led me to this other place that I think we want to talk about is just started realizing how critical I was of myself and how much self-aggression I had towards myself in obvious and subtle ways. And I just started to realize like, hey, this has been with me for a long time, all this criticism. Like, what if I tried something different? Like, what if I really tried to be self-compassionate? What would that look like? And, you know, that led me on a wholly different journey. And, you know, that's been beautiful. And again, I'm sure with your experience of meditation, it's not like instantaneous. It's sort of subtle and it evolves, and you know, you all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're like, wow, things are really different. I can't really point to one thing, but I know that something is very different.
Well, it's super subtle and it's really slow. But it's, to your point, I did it as a reason because I was feeling bad and I was having anxiety. I was like, man, I need to calm down. And one of our mutual friends, Anton Haramis, was like, dude, why don't you meditate? I'm like, I fucking hate meditation, man. He's like, just take 10 minutes and meditate in your car. I was in my car. Like my kid was at like improv class.
Yeah.
And I did it and it felt better.
Yeah.
Calm me down. That was, you know, I did it. I mean, I did it kicking and screaming and then it evolved. And now, I didn't meditate much last year, but I picked it up again this year a lot because as a practice. And again, I love the Sam Harris waking up, 10 or 20 minutes a day. And just think the way he's a neuroscientist, the way he thinks about it, like, is helpful, you know, for me, I'm very logic brain, but you know, let's talk about this idea of like self-aggression, because I think that, like, what did it mean? Like, first of all, some people, I think that we are all really great, honest liars to ourselves.
Yeah.
And for me, the moment I realized there was a lot of self-aggression in my life was when I realized I had lied to myself in that I had sold myself on the story that I'm so loving to myself.
Mm.
And this was the story that I had somehow convinced myself of. That no, I do love myself in a lot of ways, right? Like, I'm Darius's biggest fan, right? So that was the story I told myself. Dude, Darius is the fucking best. He's the man. I love him. And then, and behind that, I'm like, but you better fucking win.
Yeah.
You better get to work, motherfucker. You better not disappoint me. Me being me.
Yeah.
so there was these dual tracks running, and I didn't realize. And I was always like, oh yeah, that's how I motivate myself.
Yeah. Right?
And then I had this awakening where I was like, whoa, that's self-aggression.
Yeah.
I am my biggest fan at the expense of me being my biggest critic.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. And it was a thing that just I caught myself doing. And like, it was like, to your point, the Matrix, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
And that was a turning point for me. It took me, you know, this was a couple years ago, but so I'd love to hear like your story and then what have you done to kind of like work with that? Because I know obviously, but I think that you've done such an amazing job of, you know, clearing this achievement gap and like loving on, you know, not being your harshest critic, but actually like taking the time to have an awareness around it and leveling up. When I say that I seen you level up so much, this is specifically what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate the reflection. I mean, I think part of it is when you start to see things like that, you can't unsee them. Right. I mean, I've had a couple experiences. I was at Esalen and I was in the tubs and, you know, I smoked a little bit of cannabis and I had some other journey experiences. But in that moment, like all of a sudden I just heard like, you've been neglecting your wife. And it was so true and it was so real for me that I couldn't deny it. And I didn't even know what was going on. Like every time I closed my eyes, I would see kind of this thing going on. And I ended up sitting in the hot tub with a woman who was a healer. I wish I knew her name. She really had such a beautiful impact in my life. And for like 3 or 4 hours, she sat with me and we talked about that. We talked about, you know, how I was relating to my younger son. I was really getting upset with him being so emotional. I learned in that moment that was unresolved issues with my mom and I that I was playing out on my son. And then I had this mentor in my life who was, you know, is a good human, but he was the wrong mentor for me. And he was sort of like my kryptonite. And the next day I woke up and it was like I'd lifted 10,000 pounds from my back. Like it just was shocking how these huge realizations came through in that moment. But then I had to get to work, right? And then what I really realized there's this parable or proverb or whatever about the two fish in the water. Have you ever heard this one? Have we talked about this one?
I think so, but remind me.
So the one fish turns to the other fish and says, the water's cold today. And the other fish goes, what's water? Like for me, that moment at Esalen was recognizing the water. Like I was there all of a sudden, like this has all been around me and I had no idea that it was playing out, but now all of a sudden here it is. And, you know, it was like, I used to describe it as like, you find a little thread on your shirt and you start to pull it, but all of a sudden I pulled it and I was naked. Like, wow, there was so much going on. And so that, but again, that curiosity, I had to really accept gosh, I had been neglecting my wife for all of these years. And so I got out of that, like on the way home from that experience, I called her and I said, you know, I think I've been neglecting you for all these years. And she, you know, she wept. It was true. And that began like a 3-year journey of the two of us really healing and repairing our relationship and really developing a new sense of trust and, you know, cleaning up our wounds. I mean, that was a huge day for me. For a variety of reasons. That was one of the days that I just decided, hey, like there's a bunch of things that are unresolved in my life with my mother and my father and my sons and my wife. And I'm going to just turn towards it instead of doing what I have normally done, which is turning away from it. And I think that's a big part of it. It's like, what are the things that are unresolved in your life? And just deciding to turn towards it instead of moving away from it was huge. I mean, it was scary and it was uncomfortable and it was challenging, but my life up to that point had been really good at avoiding discomfort. And so like it was a big shift to turn into the discomfort. And on the other side of it is it has been real freedom and relief for me.
Yeah, I think that there's something. First of all, I appreciate you sharing your story because I know some of the story already, but it's, you know, it takes a lot of vulnerability to do this, obviously in a public setting. There's going to be, you know, potentially tens of thousands of people hearing this. I guess first things first, did you use like therapy as a way as a tool to try to work through this stuff? Cause I think like a lot of people might be listening and be like, if they're not self-aware enough, they may not realize, hopefully they're not doing it, but I think we all do it. I think at a young age we're taught, hey, that hurts, ignore it or build around it or hide it or bury it or whatever it is you got to do so that it doesn't affect you. Right.
Yeah.
And we all have different things that we've had to work through in our lives. So for me, like very similar to yourself, like there was, and I'm still, you know, working on it a lot right now, but I figured out, oh man, if I just don't feel it, if I just like don't think about that bad thing, then I don't have to deal with it. And I'll just go focus on the things I can control and the things that I can make me feel good, like winning. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go win in sports. I'm going to go win in school. I'm going to go win with, you know, friends. I'm going to go win in business. And what I found was interesting is that works really well until it doesn't.
Until it doesn't,
Because the winning part feels fucking good. I mean, I still like to win.
Sure.
You know? But I mean, I had this incident. My first time I realized that was a trap, that was a problem, was when my first business failed. And I went from really winning a lot to losing and feeling worthless. And I was like, oh my gosh, people are not adoring me and telling me how great I am. And maybe I was a one hit wonder. I started feeling like Vanilla Ice for a second. No offense, Vanilla. We're not close anymore, but you know, but I did, I felt like a one hit wonder. And I'm like, and then I did the natural thing, which is I busted out the flog and started like whipping myself and being like, you better go win again, D. Go fucking win. Prove all those naysayers wrong that deserted you when you lost. And then I did, and then I won again, bigger than ever. But I learned that time where I was like, all right, I can't tie my identity to winning. Because I know it's inevitable that I'm not going to win again. But I also didn't have the solution to like unwind it. I just knew that's not a solution.
Hey gang, Darius Mashaza here. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. So listen, I know we have a lot of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and business owners out there that listen to the show. And right now, if you're one of those folks and you're doing, let's call it a bare minimum of 7 figures and above in your business, then what I'd like to do is give you an offer right now. How would you like to get your hands on the frameworks that I actually used to scale my last company, which started off as a small little 7-figure company to over $100 million in annual revenue? And I did it in less than 2 years, and I did it without costly growing pains, without the headaches that you usually experience when you are scaling your business. So if you're one of those folks and you're trying to grow your company, but you're finding yourself stuck in that day-to-day, if you're one of the listeners and you're getting grinded, this is your respite from getting grinded on in your business, you're listening to our show, and you're dealing with the breakdowns, you're dealing with inefficiencies, and you know, you've got that firefighter suit on and all the problems lining on your desk, and you're not doing the work you're supposed to be doing, which is working on the business instead of in it, then what I'm about to talk to you about for the next, call it 60 seconds, this is precisely for you. Real quickly, though, if you don't already know this about me, prior to starting The Greatness Machine, I spent 20 years of my life as a founder and CEO of real-world companies. And during that time, I actually grew my companies to over $1.2 billion with a B in bootstrap revenue. In fact, we scaled out my last company from 30 to 1,000 employees, and we did it in just 36 months. And we did it all by using a three-step framework that I call my Scale Map Method. So that, of course, brings us to the purpose of this here mid-roll ad. Yes, this is what the podcast producers call these things. Recently, I created a 30-minute training, and what it does is it walks you step-by-step through all of my Scale Map Method frameworks, and you can watch it right now for free when you go to DariusScale.com. That's my first name, Darius, Scale, S-C-A-L-E.com. And what these frameworks do is they fix, they simplify, and they streamline every single aspect of your business. And they do it without the need for complicated scaling systems that are typically way too difficult and way too time consuming for a busy CEO like you and for my, like myself was to implement. So if you want a simple and you want a proven path to remove yourself from the day-to-day operations, just like I did, so that you can do what you're supposed to be doing, which is leading your company to record growth without the headaches and without the growing pains, go to DariusScale.com. That's www.DariusScale.com. Watch the short video, and I'll see you guys on the inside. Now, back to the show.
So, like, for you, it's like, you know, what did you do to start untangling that? Because obviously you had this epiphany, but like, what does someone do when they have that epiphany that's like, oh, I have not been like, you know, giving my wife the attention she needs, or I haven't been loving on myself, or I've been slogging myself. What do you do with that information?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, you know, I like sat down one day and said, like, I've seen a lot of personal development change. I've gotten all this feedback that I've changed. Like, what are the things that I, you know, that really put all this together? And so I kind of look at it as there's like four categories of things that really, if you don't have to have them all at the same time, but you know, that they all have a different impact. So one of the first things I thought about is like our forum, right? Like, we have a peer group of people that are trusted that know you authentically. And that's been amazing, right? I mean, people go through life and to have people mirror back and reflect. So having a group of people that are really close and peer, but it's also limited, right? Like, not everybody has expertise. So like, you know, you get your mirror back, but they're not necessarily trained. So for me, having a peer support group was really powerful. Then of course, therapy, like some of the things that were unearthed, like, you know, when I realized that I had unresolved issues with my mother, like, that seems like a good thing to go talk to a therapist about. So I've tried lots of different therapy. You know, I've a good friend of mine's a cognitive behavioral therapist. He largely helped me overcome guilt and shame in a road trip one time. And I've gone through some other professional therapy, different modalities over the years. And I'm a huge fan of it. I think this is one of the big challenges of our country is like people like think that going to therapy means you're bad or problematic. I think it's great. I think learning about yourself is great. But anyway, so kind of peer support, therapy where needed, real self-directed practices. So we talk about this in our forum, getting your meds right. Med standing for meditation, exercise, diet, and sleep. But what are the things that you're doing every day? And so for me, you know, depending on the situation, I've journaled, I do a lot of meditation. I'm a huge fan of isolation tank floating, which is just another form of meditation, really. You know, getting, you know, my sleep in order, a lot of those things, you know, I love this Aura ring. I sleep really well. But again, that kind of falls into that third category of what are the things you're self-directed. And then the fourth one, which honestly, probably, you know, just about the timing and everything, was coaching. So working with Coach Robert really changed my life. I mean, honestly, I was working with Coach Robert while in forum and doing therapy. And it was like, and all my self-directed practices. And it was like a lot, but it was really together. Those things were really changing my experience. But I do think, you know, if I was to say one thing, meditation was foundational, because you don't have mindfulness, then it's hard to really, you know, kind of self, to really see what's going on sometimes. So like to being able to be real self-aware was a huge part of that. But anyway, the four things that I really broadly worked on was coaching, peer support, therapy, and then self-directed practices like meditation. And with all of that, I felt powerful to tackle anything, right? Like things are going well with my wife. No problem. I know I've got these different resources to do so. And I think actually, you know, I credit Robert for this in many ways. Like I was on this spiritual journey and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go find self-actualization and it's going to be in some book or some retreat or something. And one day he turned to me and he said, your wife's your spiritual practice. And it, like, again, it's like that two fish in the water thing. Like I couldn't unsee it when I saw it. And it totally reframed it for me. And that was a really, I mean, that one conversation really made such a huge difference in my relationship with my wife. And it
What do you think he meant by that though? Like why would she be your spiritual practice?
Well, because
like, she's an anchor for that.
Well, I think that I was looking for something outside of myself. It was some like, you know, I think a lot of times people go down this spiritual path and they want to like transcend the form. Right. And his point was like, no, dude, it's like right in front of you. And the work is with her. And, you know, of course, the work was with me also. But, you know, we're talking a lot about loving. What I realized is like I had a bunch of ideas about who I thought she was supposed to be.
Right.
And the big shift for me was really just loving her for exactly who she is. And, you know, my wife, you've known her, she's loud, she's beautiful, she's boisterous, but she was loud, right? Like, and I had this experience in my own life where as a little kid, my aunt was loud and it would freak me out. And so I was carrying around this idea that she shouldn't be loud. And one day, like, again, her being my spiritual practice, is like, wow, she's just loud. Like, and that's totally fine. And I think, honestly, that was the day that I ultimately realized that I just loved her for exactly who she is. Which to me, you know, it was easy to see that in her, but I also think that's the same thing we need to do for ourselves. Like, how do we love ourselves for exactly who we are without exception? Like, as soon as I did that for my wife, everything changed. And as soon as I started to do that for myself, everything started to change. You know, to really accept who we are fully. Even the parts that we would otherwise consider less desirable or bad. I think that's, I can't understate like how important it is that we truly love all parts of ourselves. It seems simple to say, but it's obviously pretty hard to do sometimes.
And so do you feel like having, like, it's funny when we were talking about my number one, like that's amazing. And that you've come to that conclusion. And I think a lot of people say stuff like this. It actually drives me crazy when people post shit like this on social media. I'm like, dude, like Mother's Day just happened and there was so many people posting stuff like that. And I was like, oh, my wife would shoot me if I posted. You posted some cool stuff about Binmin, but my wife would kill me because she's not on social. She's like, don't talk about me. I feel like we live in a world where people, you know, they want to brag on social about everything in life, and it's this exterior, like they want this validation from the world and their behavior, you know? And this is the opposite. Like this is actually like it's all internal validation, but from the right mindset, having the mindset that like, hey man, like you are good enough and you are doing a great job, and you know, not having to like win to like feel better. So when you start thinking about these realizations and this journey you've gone on, because I feel like it's really leveled you up from a perspective of A, your own life, and B, your ability to help others through coaching, through your podcast, and we can talk about that in a second. But as opposed to this other role, which is, you know, well, I got to win in business and win as an entrepreneur, and I need outside validation. And you know, we're talking about this earlier before we got on the show, which is this you know, achievers, you know, what's it called? The achievement gap, right? Or
with the achievement fallacy or something like that? Or
the achievement fallacy. Yeah. Right. This thing where it's like, when I win, I win.
Yeah.
The achievement trap. Right. So when I win, once I get this, then I will feel that. Right. And I feel like that's the achievement trap, which is we get, and then we need to go get more because we just cross shit off our list. And this kind of flips that inside out and says, well, great. Like, you can go and achieve for the sake of, you know, whatever it is that you want to achieve for. But if you don't love yourself in the process and like take care of, you know, those around you and accept people for who they are, and then you're constantly like, there's almost like a compare and despair situation that happens. Yeah. Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think as long as you're looking for anything external to validate yourself, you're building a home on a shaky foundation, right? Like having self-direct, you know, that loving yourself, recognizing that you're valuable just by being here. And that's amazing. And again, it's a lot of these things sound like cliches, but if you really appreciate it, you can start to see the beauty in it. I mean, like, that's why sometimes it's like you have to take that lens and go really far out, right? I mean, the fact that, you know, we're all came from the same source is pretty remarkable. I mean, we see billions of people and we're like, people, but it's like it's kind of amazing. We're the most advanced thing we've ever experienced. It's pretty remarkable if you really take a step and look at it. I mean, I don't want to get all metaphysical on you, but, you know, I do think that it really starts with that internal space. And it's just, again, this is not Pollyannish, right? I mean, there are things about my behavior and the way I show up. I got into one of the more challenging arguments with my wife that we've had in the last year, 2 days ago, right? Like, she and I just, our triggers, our emotional wounds just rammed right into each other. And it took us, you know, 24 hours to really repair. So it's not like there's any sort of perfection here. It's just like, we could kind of see that, like, oh, those are our hurts coming at each other. And it's like, oh, this is great. It's just unearthed something that's unresolved for me. So that gives me an opportunity to, like, oh, wow, this is a pointer to my work. So instead of like, oh gosh, I'm bad, I really hurt her and I did all these horrible things, I'm like, oh wow, gosh, I didn't realize that that's how I'm showing up. Boy, that's a gift. Like, that's something I get to go look at and work through, which is a very different way of doing it. I mean, we've talked about the second arrow before, haven't we? Did we talk about the second arrow?
I think so, but remind me.
Yeah, the second arrow is, so the first arrow is the thing that happens, right? The pain that happens that you can't avoid. Like, something happens. Like, in my case, I got into this argument with my wife. But the second arrow is the one that you hold in your own hand, you stab yourself with, right? Oh gosh, I'm horrible. This is means I suck. I just, you know, this, I'm never going to be, no one's going to love me again. Da, 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 da. The second arrow is optional. Like, you can't avoid the first ones. Life's going to, you're going to run into pain, right? It's just going to happen. But how much of that suffering that you face is a result of your own second arrowing? And so just really remembering to, like, that's the one you hold in your own hand, so you can let it go, is really powerful. And again, that doesn't mean like copping out of it. I mean, I took full responsibility for my actions and I learned some things really powerful about that are unresolved for me about, you know, our parenting styles and how we come together without taking it, you know, an arrow to my own heart about it. Very different.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it, man. And this goes back to this, like, the practice of meditation slows you down enough so you can see it, right?
Yeah.
Because, and that's at least been the biggest win I've gotten from being, again, a self-proclaimed hater of meditation until I realized, oh no, shit, this is a skill set that I get to develop purely to slow myself down, right? Where
yeah,
I started doing some crazy shit, you know, because, dude, I mean, I'm a solid C-minus student at some of this stuff, where I will go on the attack and start, like, I was going to say third arrow, because I shoot two before I shoot one back at myself. I'm like, my wife and kids all have arrows in their heads, and I'm like, oh, where's mine? Yeah, you know, but having, you know, when we've been talking previously around having meditative practice, and it's funny, man, you start looking when, you know, I know a lot of people who are maybe just getting turned on to this stuff. Like, one of the things that turned on for me was when I did it and it had a positive effect, and I just started doing research about, and because I'm such a hardcore, like, wanting to win type of person, and I was like, practices of billionaires. I literally Google like top things billionaires do every day, and every time you'll see meditation is one of them, right? It's like exercise, meditation, and these are all around, which some of the stuff we talked around, taking care of themselves, putting their mind first. Dude, your mind is your most powerful tool.
Yeah.
Your existence is how you show up in the world. There is nothing more powerful than that. So to neglect the ability to have some semblance of, maybe not control, but an awareness around how you show up with that, it is, I think, almost naive to think that that is not the most important thing for you to like spend some time on.
I agree with you. I mean, you have to break out of the illusion, right? And, you know, like we all have egos, and egos are, you know, are valuable structures. I'm glad I have one, but I also, you know, want to be in a different relationship with it, and breaking out of that constant identification with it is really powerful. I think, you know, one of the things, just as we're, you know, riffing on kind of loving yourself, I think one of the things that people find difficult sometimes is, well, I have this neurotic behavior, or I have this behavior that I don't like, or I have this thing that I don't like about myself. And so one of the most powerful reframes that I've, you know, that I experienced around this is, like, these types of behaviors that we have that sometimes we don't like really came from a loving source. Right. Like, so, right. You know, if you're a young kid and say you're having it, you know, there's a chaotic experience in your life and you did something. I mean, even cutting is an example. I mean, I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know, but like, you know, think about it. You did something to be safe or to be in your field of love. So you create these weird behaviors. You're a young kid. All you're trying to do is be safe and in the field of love of your parents. And so you do this thing, and now, you know, now you're an adult and this thing still exists, but you've forgotten why it was created. But its origin was positive. It just no longer serves you. And right. Robert says this best. It's like, we're solutions to problems that no longer exist. We're a solution to a problem that no longer exists. But it was so powerful for me to realize, like, wait a second, this thing that I do that I don't like about myself started from a place of me trying to feel safe and loved. Like, its origin is positive. And so instead of like resisting it, like, oh, I got to move away from this, what if I turned to it and acknowledged it? What if I said, gosh, thank you, old behavior, for keeping me safe. You're no longer needed. Right? Like, it's really, it's a strange thing. It's like turning towards the thing and saying you really love, you know, you love that. It kept you safe. It did something for you. And, you know, if you talk to a lot of the cognitive behavioral therapists, one of the biggest challenges they face is people with resistance, because, you know, ultimately this thing that they're wanting to change also says something positive about themselves. So like at some level, like we have to turn towards these things, acknowledge them, and really love them, even if they're the things that you don't think are lovable about yourself. That was a huge shift for me, because then it became easier to love myself, even for the things that weren't great, you know, that I didn't think were great. And just like, oh, this came from an origin. Positive place, like, makes it easier for me to do that. And again, it doesn't mean that you don't work through those things or create boundaries or go through the changes, but just you're no longer in like conflict with yourself around it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, a good friend of ours, Christina Harbridge, she posted something online yesterday today. It was like, basically, it was kind of to the extent of what you're talking about, which is like, hey, look, like this thing that I used to say was part of my personality was really just trauma manifesting itself in some protectionary mode. And so I've kind of been on the opposite end of this, where I've been like, man, I really hate this thing about myself. And I've just now started to turn the corner just now. Like, this is like last couple weeks. You know, I'm doing some really interesting like hypnotherapy, like internal family systems therapy, which is freaking, dude, amazing. Powerful. Super powerful. I mean, it's weird. You know, it's weird. I had a session on, when was it, Saturday? I had a session where I hung out with like 12-year-old Darius, 17-year-old Darius, and 3-year-old Darius, all sitting around the same conference room. And
beautiful.
Like, and so, yeah, the story for another time. But it's amazing to like kind of dive in deep and face those like parts of yourself. And so, you know, those things, to your point, served us, but you have, and I was talking to this therapist I'm working with, and he said, look, man, you've spent a lot of time doing work already, so we can go there here quick. And I credit 100% of this with having a mindfulness practice, because what you're talking about is the ability to stop, look at something and not judge it.
Yeah.
And try not to judge it, and just like be curious as to like, why is that there? Right? As opposed to like, I hate that that's there, or, oh, that's something about me that's bad. It's like, no, it's all you. Like, if you're going to love on yourself, you got to love on yourself for the good and the things that maybe are not good anymore, right? Because to your point, like, maybe they were there. They were there to protect you. Like, we didn't create these neurotic behaviors because we're like, hey, I'm a perfectly, you know, sound minded, level balanced person. That would be a really good thing to go fuck me up. I'm going to go do a bunch of that stuff. Something that got created for a reason to help you.
Yeah.
Right. But now it's not serving you, to your point.
Totally. I mean, you're not, you know, you didn't create these with your 46-year-old wise self. No, your 6-year-old self that has, you know, is unconscious, doesn't know what to do, is just trying to feel love and feel safe, right? Like, those, you know, those things have deep origins. And to really recognize that, I think that shift of going from judgment to curiosity is powerful. Like, instead of judging it, why not be curious? Why not ask, what is this here to teach me? What could I learn from this? What does this say? Like, what is this thing that I need to learn? Because I think, you know, when we run into our triggers, that's just unresolved things for us. I mean, in our culture, it just frustrates me, you know, oh, you triggered me. Well, okay. I actually am like, great. Like, that's a pointer to unresolved things for me. Thank you. Now, if it's reliable, then that means I can, you know, figure out where it is to go. I mean, again, I know people use this in different contexts, but generally I'm like, oh, wow. That's great. This is something that's unresolved for me. Thank you for helping me recognize this thing that I need to go look at.
But I can't trigger you. Only you can trigger you.
Well, that is true, ultimately, right? I mean, you know, like, the, you know, I'm just responding to that. Like, it doesn't meet my expectation. Again, this is all, it's all you. That's the thing.
Right.
Like, that's ultimately the thing. It's all you. And they're all just stories. We're just making up stories to make sense of the world. So why don't, you know. That was the other really powerful thing. It's all stories.
Yeah. The stories we tell ourselves are insane too. Like, we're such good storytellers. And again, having that ability to like slow down and have some equanimity and be like, that's a really bizarre story that I believe.
Yeah.
Totally. Wow, I can't believe I actually, you know, I had this a situation with my son where, you know, one of my former colleagues, I was at their house and their daughter was like, didn't come out to say hi to me. She's a teenage girl in her room, comes down to dinner after I was there for a couple hours, was on the phone. You know, I'd ask her a question. I get like a one word answer. And I was like, WTF. Like, and like the parents weren't like stepping in to do anything about it. They were just like, whatevs.
Yeah.
and so I came home and I was a complete fucking asshole to my 12-year-old, like, about his phone.
Yeah.
And I was mean to him, right? Like a jerk, mean. I was fucking bullying him. And then I realized I slowed down for a second. I was like, dude, I'm just mad at, I don't want this. I'm being triggered by what happened at this other house.
Yeah.
And I have high expectations for my children, and I don't want him to behave that way.
Yeah.
And even though he hasn't behaved that way, or he was doing little stuff that might, you know, he was on his phone or something, I was like bashing on him, right?
Totally.
And then I slowed down. And I just sat him down. I said, "Hey, man, I'm sorry." Like this, and I told him what happened. I said, "Look, I was at so and so's house, and this happened. And like, I just want you to be respectful when I don't want you to be addicted to your phone."
Yeah.
And that's why I'm. And he was. And, you know, my son's so fucking awesome. He's just like, "Oh, it's good. You're okay, Dad."
But it's great noticing, Terrace. I mean, to see how like that. You know, that triggered you. It brings up your own fears. It brings up your own. I mean, I don't know about you, but like I feel like my kids at their ages are bringing up the things that were somewhat unresolved for me at those ages. So, you know, my 12-year-old's triggering my 12-year-old traumas, and my 9-year-old is triggering a little, you know, or I'm being triggered by those things in myself, of course. But, you know, just to be able to have that space. And I think also, you know, you're reading that book, 4,000 Weeks, which I think is a great book. Just having some perspective on these things. Again, I love what Sam Harris said about this. Like, you never know when the last time you're going to do something is. I know it's a little bit of a non sequitur, but like, such a powerful recognition, right? Because it helps you really appreciate this moment that we're in right now. I mean, I actually don't remember the last day that I picked up my son from the top bunk. Like, I'd pick him up every morning, give him a hug, and put him down on the ground. One day that stopped. Right. And just such an appreciation. And I think one of the things that you look, you know, 4,000 Weeks helps give a lot of that perspective, which is really helpful in, you know, as you're going through life to really take a broader perspective really helps. I mean, I, you know, we've talked a lot about the tool of meditation, but you can't, I think it's important to have some of the underlying concepts too, like impermanence, perspective. I mean, there's been a lot of value in exploring death, which sounds morbid, but I think it's really a powerful topic. And there's just a lot of other elements that have gone along in that journey, because we're multifaceted, you know, like there's just all these little places that needed some love and attention. And then ultimately, I think the thing is, and I'm not, is to like put down the whole project, to be honest with you, I'm not necessarily this thing that needs to be improved. It's like, I can just accept and love where I'm at. Not totally there yet. I'm still a little bit in project based, but you know.
Yeah. Well, you're doing some great work. And you know, it's funny, like, you know, you're doing great work. It's really cool to watch it, and it's motivational for me, and it helps. It's a guide for me. So you keep getting better, because it helps me. Yeah, keep doing your thing, man. Keep working on that project. Trust me, you have people watching. You know, it's funny though. We were talking about the book 4,000 Weeks, and I don't want to get too stuck on this, because I actually want to talk about Growth Pioneers, your podcast, and your coaching a little bit. But he has this concept of what, finitude, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like finality, right? And we have, and for anyone that hasn't, you know, read that book, it's a new book that just came out. And it's this idea that you got 4,000 weeks on this earth, you know, like make them count, you know. Is that what it is? 4,000?
4,000 weeks is like 76 years. So, you know, plus or minus, you know, some hundreds of weeks, that's pretty much the average lifespan. And, you know, the finitude thing was interesting for me, because it's like you can't do it all, right? And so constantly you're making choices, and every choice, everything you say yes to are things you're saying no to. And like, what are the things that are really important, and what are the things that really matter to you? And you know, like that book was really helpful. I was reading it on a road trip down to Vegas, and I was in there, and my kids were being super annoying for whatever reason. And then he goes to this chapter, and it was like, well, you know, if you had lost your son, you would give anything to have that most uncomfortable moment right now. Like I'm in this moment, I'm like, the kids are driving me crazy. But if I lost him, I would give anything to have that moment back. And so again, some perspective, right? Just having that perspective, like life is feels long, but it's actually pretty short. And you know, do you want to go through your life constantly being critical and giving yourself a hard time, or do you want to like put down the battle and really start to understand who you are? I mean, I guess that would be the other thing I would say, is really recognizing who you are intrinsically. Like the idea of like a tropism, right, is a plant's natural inclination to move towards light. Like we all have these natural ways of being that add value into the world. But at least in my case, I had a bunch of stories and ideas about how I was supposed to be that wasn't in line with who I really was. And so when I was able to drop those stories and trust in who I was, just got easier. Maybe that's the beauty of being older, but like, I just love who I am now. I feel much more comfortable in who I am. And it's not for everybody, but it's good for me. And it's materialized in coaching and all these other things that have been super rewarding.
Yeah, man, I love hearing that. Man, and I think that there's a stable of famous thinkers that agree with everything you just said. You know, whether you're listening to the Stoics or whether you're, you know, listening to the Bible, or, you know, you start going down the list of these like universal like lessons, and they all align around what you're talking about, you know, and it crosses all cultures, you know? So it's like, who the fuck am I to argue with, like, you know, the greatest thinkers of our time of history, you know, in the last 5,000 years or 3,000 years or whatever. And it's like, you know, it'd be one thing if it was just Seneca saying it, but it's not. Well, it's a lot of these guys saying it.
Totally. And this is why, like, I kind of feel like I'm a, you know, freelance mystic, right? Like, mystic is really around direct experience, right? And that's, you know, the direct experience with divine, spirit, God, mystery, source, whatever you want to call it. You know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. But to me, that's, you know, that's where it's at. And, you know, meditation is one way of falling, you know, of kind of clearing some of the noise and kind of resting from that perspective. But I got to tell you, it even changed my relationship with alcohol. I mean, we went out and had some drinks in Austin, which was super fun. I haven't done that in a while, but like one day it just didn't matter to me anymore. Like, I used to look forward to drinking on the weekends, and it just changed for me. Like, all of a sudden, I was like, nah, I'm just good. I like this me. Like, I'm good. I don't need to change anything. Like, I don't need to move away from that. You know, people talk about higher vibration, lower vibration. I don't really know. Ultimately, what I realized was I'm just happy with where I'm at, and I like being conscious, and I like feeling the way I feel. And so I just don't need it. And now, every now and then, I'll go back and have beers. That was one of the more interesting experiences for me because I like to party. I mean, you and I have known each other for a long time. I went to state school, Arizona. I mean, I know how to party. And then just one day, I was like, don't need that anymore. And it just stopped. It was weird. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I was pinching myself. I'm like, doesn't do anything for me. And I retested it a few times, but it just doesn't do anything for me. It's wild.
I haven't hit that road yet.
To each their own. Like, maybe it does. I don't, you know.
I'm kind of getting there, though, because it's like, is the ticket worth the ride, you know? I don't know. I do still like the party, but at the same time, like, you know, I don't like feeling terrible the next day.
Yeah.
I want to kind of, you know, we're kind of getting near the end of the show here, but I wanted to kind of like segue into, you know, the two projects that you're working on right now that our listeners might be interested in checking out. First of all, you're doing coaching, which, I mean, you know, look, I get to milk Duggar for free coaching all the time just because, and it's kind of a mutual coaching, you know, we coach each other. Yeah, you're doing some coaching right now outside of, you know, you're working at Edon, doing the stuff with the entrepreneur, you know, economic development there. But I know you're working with some really interesting people and entrepreneurs. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the work I get to do at Edon is really system level. And I really like that, being able to affect the community and see its impact, you know, throughout the community. But I was really longing for the opportunity to do deeper work with people. And so that's, you know, that's why I started doing coaching. And, you know, I have a boutique practice. I only work with a handful of clients. And most of my clients are entrepreneurs that are just trying to, you know, create a life they love. And a lot of the work, as you know, in coaching is helping people overcome self-limiting beliefs and just, you know, helping them see their potential. But ultimately, you know, the coaching framework that I work with is really around how do you create the life you love? Which is just a beautiful question because it's an emphasis on you. You know, like what you love is a little bit different than what I love, and just helping people do that. And whether that's building a billion-dollar business or having a better relationship with their spouse or their kids or whatever they're trying to create. This is one of those things that I had a lot of imposter syndrome going into this, honestly. And I've now leaned into it. And it's beautiful. I had a coaching session this morning, and it's a real honor to stand alongside people as they, you know, create the lives that they love and accomplish amazing things. So one of my clients, he's got a small fund, and now they're going to go raise, you know, a couple $100 million fund, and just seeing that whole process play out is just beautiful. It's just a real honor. It fills my heart in a way that I didn't recognize. You know, for the longest time, I was like, well, I'm only going to be successful if I'm a tech billionaire myself. And now I realize, no, I like being of service to people. It really fills me up. And coaching's a really beautiful form for that.
So what do you think is, like, when you look at, like, is everyone different than you're working with as far as like how you kind of get them moving in the right direction? Or like, if you were to like say the one thing that you see that's common that you'd like start to work on, what does that look like?
Well, I mean, you know, I feel like I'm a one trick pony. I mean, I think compassion and self-love are at the root of all of that. I mean, I think the deepest human fear is that somehow if we show who we are fully authentically, that we'll be unlovable or that we're unworthy. I mean, that's at the root of it all. But I mean, you don't start there. I mean, not everybody's ready to, you know, like, hey, I'm coming in for presentation skills coaching, or like, hey, I want to go raise a round of financing. We don't necessarily have to go to worthiness.
Yeah, you know what, self-worth? You're like, great, great, great. Let's talk about your childhood. They're like, what the fuck?
You know, but I mean, underneath all of it, right, ultimately, as you're growing as a leader, as you're growing as an entrepreneur, I mean, you're going to have to build the mountain underneath you. And so you as a person will have to grow along with it. So it's, you know, everybody is different. And it's depending on where they're at and what they're looking for. I mean, to me, I just, you know, my only criteria is that they are working on something that is net positive to the world. they're all in. I like them. And, you know, it's something that we, I think we can, that I can actually make an impact on. And, you know, so it's kind of all over the place, but I, it's super rewarding. And this sort of dovetails that we started doing a bunch of men's work, although I have, you know, I have both female clients and male clients. But, you know, I think one of the other things that's been fascinating is just all this men's work we've been doing as kind of a build out from Forum. I didn't realize, like, one day I realized, like, oh, shit, we've been part of a men's group for like 16 years. Maybe we have something to learn here. And so just been doing some other, you know, any Mankind project and things like that. Because I do think that there's a big shift going on in the world. And, you know, healthy masculine energy is needed more than ever now. And especially raising two boys, you know, that's an important thing for me. But it may intertwine with coaching and my young work. So
I love it. So let's I know you have the podcast. You know, we launched our podcast like not too far between each other. But tell us a little bit about the podcast, Growth Pioneers. I'd love for the audience to maybe like check out more of you, and would be a way for them to connect.
Yeah, thanks. Growth Pioneers really built out of this idea that, you know, I was having these amazing conversations with, you know, entrepreneurs and leaders in our community. And like, I was feeling a little bit like I was, you know, that I got all this wisdom and I wanted to share it with people. And so for me, it's really sharing the entrepreneurial journey, the entrepreneurial experiences and the community leaders that are part of the fabric of our community. And, you know, even though it's largely focused on entrepreneurs in the Reno area, I think a lot of the stories and takeaways are universally resonant. And so it's been really fun to help tell those stories and showcase the different people that are making this community valuable. I mean, we were just, you know, hanging out with your friends in Austin, and it just reminded me how powerful community is and how much it's needed. I think if there was one common thread that I've seen, at least through the men's work, is people feel really isolated. And so finding that sense of community is powerful. And so for me, just being able to tell those stories or, you know, have them tell their own story about how they're impacting the community, it's just been really rewarding. And you know, hopefully there'll be some things to learn from it. Otherwise, it's just fun. It's great to have those stories.
I love it, man. Well, look, how can people connect with you if they want to learn more maybe about your coaching or the podcast or anything like that?
Yeah, it's easy to find me, you know, on LinkedIn, just Douglas Irwin at LinkedIn is easy. Or you can, you know, reach out to me at doug@dougirwin.me. That's doug@dougirwin.me. Or just, you know, my work at edon.org. So a lot of different ways to find me. I'm pretty easy to find.
Cool. Well, we'll make sure to put that stuff in the show notes as well as your podcast. And brother, so good to connect with you and to like just spread all the amazing things you're doing in the world with everybody.
Thanks, Darius. I mean, honestly, it's just so good to see you. I love this conversation. I'm just filled with warmth and joy from this. And I'm just so happy to see, you know, you on your own journey. I've known you for a long time, and it feels like you are just being more yourself and really finding that's a great person to be with. And it makes me happy to see that.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'll end it by saying, fuck yes. Oh, man. Well, guys, what a great show. The Dugger. So much gratitude to you. Listeners, till next time.
You are listening to The Greatness Machine, and that's a wrap for today. Listen, if you love what you heard, subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform that you're tuning in on so that you don't miss any of our future episodes. We have tons of great people coming on, and we're stoked to have you here to enjoy it with us. Leave us a review. Tell us what you love most about this particular episode. We love getting the reviews. We love to see what you guys love most. And if this particular episode, you know, made you think of someone who's leveling up in their business and in their life, print screen, share it with them. Leaders are the best givers. And after all, we're all here to support and grow with each other. And in case you want to see some of the fun behind the scenes shots or some of the things that we're doing, I'm actually writing about this in my weekly newsletter. Go to www.therealdarius.com and subscribe to my newsletter. We're talking about fun things like business and life and mindfulness and cryptocurrencies and gosh, I don't even know, everything and anything, but it's tons of fun stuff I write about. I try to get it out on a weekly basis. You can subscribe at www.therealdarius.com. And with that said, look, thank you guys so much. Appreciate you. I love you. Peace. We're out of here. See you guys on the next one.
Hey there, what's up, everybody? Darius is here, and I'm here to tell you about my main man, Robert Glazer, and his amazing show, The Elevate Podcast. Robert is a buddy of mine, and his Elevate Podcast is second to none. So The Elevate Podcast, what is it? It's a conversational show where Robert sits down with world-class CEOs, New York Times best-selling authors, and the best thought leaders and performers in their fields. You're going to hear stories about triumph, failure, resilience, more importantly, all the learnings along the way. So some of his guests include James Clear from Atomic Habits, Angela Duckworth from Grit, Susan Cain, author of Quiet, Morning Brew founder and CEO Alex Lieberman, and hundreds more. Every episode shares valuable insights in how to expand your capabilities as a leader and align your life and work to your most important principles. Robert's goal is that you're going to leave each episode inspired and with plenty of next steps that you can put into practice into your life. And look, if you're looking to elevate your life, your leadership, and your business, Elevate is the show for you. It's like I always say, we as podcast listeners, we listen to 6 shows, not just mine, but Bob should be one of yours. Subscribe to the Elevate Podcast today on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Check it out.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap, Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the Podcast Princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.